Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is the New York Times bestselling author Sarah Paretsky, and she's out with a collection of short stories, Love and Other Crimes. Sarah, of course, is the brains, the pen, the fingers for typing behind The Great Detective from Chicago, V.I. Warshawski. And Sarah, this collection of short stories are, I liken them to chipping from near the green on a golf course because you need to get up and down in a hurry. So how long have these short stories been sort of festering in your mind?
They cover a range of about 20 years, and they cover a lot of ground as well. I don't play golf, so I don't know the chipping metaphor, but it really works. I'm not a great natural short story writer. Someone like Dorothy Salisbury Davis, who could create mood in the way that Shirley Jackson could, was really a phenomenal story writer. But every now and then, there's something that I want to explore that I can't do in a big novel. It isn't suited for it. And then it's really a challenge and interesting to put it on a small canvas.
The short story is one of these genres that I think had its heyday years ago. I still read The New Yorker. I love the short stories there. But as far as the market goes, you've written so many novels, but where is the market now for short stories?
At least in crime fiction, and I think probably for general fiction, you are right. The heyday is long gone. It used to be that you could write a mystery short story, and there were places like Suspense Magazine, or I can't remember the name of Otto Penzler's magazine, Mystery Scene, I think it was, along with Ellery Queen and Alfred Hitchcock, and just a lot of different outlets, but also publishers were keener on them. So the first short story collection I did was editing a lot of stories by a number of crime writers, women crime writers, to showcase what we were doing. And both of those collections came out in hardcover. My own first VI short story collection came out in hardcover. This is a soft cover edition because publishers just figure the market isn't there now.
When you sit down to write your short story, are there certain judgment calls you have to make as far as plot development to try to shorten it? Because I would think that it's harder to write a short story than it is a novel because you have to write so much more tightly.
Exactly, and I think that's why it's not my own personal best métier, because I'm very interested in big, complicated plots. On the other hand, the stories in this collection, they all turn on a small dime, so to speak, and that's a wonderful challenge. I had fun with writing these. One of my favorites in the collection is Miss Bianca, which is told from the point of view of a 10-year-old girl. I don't know how old you are, but those of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s, divorce was such a taboo, and her mother is divorced, and the girl doesn't have friends because the friends' mothers all think divorce is catching, and if they bring her over, their husbands are at risk. So her mother takes her to work with her after school every day, and she's a secretary to a scientist, and the people in the lab take pity on the girl and give her the job of feeding the mice so that she feels she's one of the team, and then the little girl adopts one of the mice and tries to rescue her from science experiments, and then the plot kind of blows up from there.
Well, you grew up as the daughter of a scientist, right?
I did, and this, I guess that's one reason why I like this story so much. It's actually based on an episode in my father's life. He worked on an organism that potentially could be used in biological warfare, and one that the Russians were working very hard on developing. He had a chance to go behind the Iron Curtain, and they wouldn't let him inspect their labs, but he somehow, I don't know how, persuaded one of their lab techs to inject him with this organism so that he could carry it home in his own body. He got off the plane in Kansas City with a fever of 104 degrees, but he wouldn't seek medical attention until his lab tech came and took blood from him so that he could culture it. And I think of that often, and I think, was he a madman? Was he the ultimate mad scientist, or was he so driven by his interest in what he was doing that he forgot little considerations like life and limb. Anyway, he survived. And I never had the chance. He wasn't a person you could ask personal questions of very easily.
Well,
so I still don't really know what was going through his mind.
Your father, you were born when your father was in Ames at Iowa State University. What was he doing there?
He was doing his PhD there in what we today call cell biology. And, gosh, my parents didn't have any money, so they didn't have a baby bath. They took me into the lab with them and washed me under, bathed me in the laboratory sink. So I guess the smell of lab chemicals is always an aphrodisiac for me, and what can I say?
Well, you grew up in Kansas and then moved to Chicago. How soon was it after moving to Chicago that you started to get to know the sights, smells, sounds of the streets there, that you were able to start taking them in and being able to put them into novels about a PI, V.R. Warshawski?
I came to Chicago in the summer of 1966. I was 19, and I was a volunteer in a program trying to help with the civil rights activity in Chicago. Probably the best boss I ever worked for was the minister of the church I was assigned to, and he had us so involved in everything in the city. I didn't know then that I was taking it in to write about it. I just knew that I'd found my home, I guess, after growing up in, we lived in the country in Kansas. My nearest neighbor was a cow. So being in a big city and just taking all that in was incredibly stimulating, but also because of my boss, I just learned the city in ways that still stay with me.
I've been to Chicago many times over the years, living in the Midwest like I do, and I've noticed that there seems to be a lack of crime fiction set in Chicago. There's several big authors, and a lot of them seem to live there, that write about it. But what is it about Chicago that maybe people shy away from and don't realize the richness of the area for crime novels?
That's a really good question. I think some of it has to do with people are stuck in the past with the kind of the aura of Al Capone, and they don't realize that in some ways we've never moved on from that kind of corruption and crime, and in other ways we're much more sophisticated now, and there's a deeper layer to mine. Someone like John Harvey writes really well about this city. Stuart Dybeck, who's not a crime writer, of course, but still, he's the person who I think does the greatest job of capturing the feel of the streets.
I'm chatting with Sarah Paretsky about her brand new collection of short stories, Love and Other Crimes. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold. V.R. Warshawski, when you write about someone like her and you've created her, you've gotten to know her so long all these years, how does she manifest herself in your day-to-day life? I mean, does she seem to you like just a friend that you've known forever and you think about her as you would a real human being?
You know, she's very real to me in a particular way. It's not as though I feel her presence with me as I walk around. In fact, some of the time I think that she would be extremely critical of me because she's such a risk taker. She doesn't count the cost before she jumps into a burning building, and I'm sitting there on the sideline kind of observing and thinking, should I, shouldn't I? I'm more like Hamlet, I guess. her presence in my personal life is the critical voice of, you're not doing enough Paretsky and you should be taking more chances. But when I sit down to write, sometimes I write the stories in this collection, for instance, a number of them are not VI stories, and I had a good time writing them. But when I sit down to write about VI, it is kind of like putting on that comfortable old sweater that you wear on cold days that just fits you like a glove and keeps you comforted.
The stories that don't have to do with VI in the collection here, Love and Other Crimes, is that a way for you to just try out new characters and new things that may springboard into something else?
Well, exactly. One of them, Acid Test, I used to wonder what daughters of women of my generation, the second wave feminist generation, how they would react growing up in our households. I never had the gift of children of my own, but I used to imagine this hypothetical daughter, and would she rebel against us and become very straight-laced, or how would she act? And so Acid Test was my chance to explore a relationship between a mother who kind of went to the ashrams of India and never came back emotionally, came back physically, and her daughter, who loves her mother dearly but became a forensic engineer, wants everything in her life very carefully organized and laid out, and then comes to the rescue of her mother in the story. I had thought maybe I could create a new series that so that VI didn't become stale for me, and the forensic engineer temple. I loved the concept, but she just didn't engage me emotionally the way VI does, so I abandoned the idea of a series about her.
As we're coming to the end of the cycle of books that were written and set pre-coronavirus, is it something as a writer that you think about now as to whether you want to set books in 2017, 2018 versus present day and having to deal with different things and an ever-changing society that may not even be relevant by the time book comes out after it's been written?
Well, that's such a good question, Brian. Because I am, in fact, struggling. I have a novel that I've gone back to the beginning of five times that's due January 15th, so I'd better buckle down and figure out what I'm doing with it. But it's exactly that problem. My books are set in the present. It would feel fake and artificial to me to go back pre-corona. Gosh, I wish I could go back pre-1980 when we all had health insurance and when you put your phone down, you knew exactly where it was because it wasn't mobile. but I have to cope with the present, and so does V.I. Warshawski, sad to say.
And, you know, you sit and say that you got a book due January 15th and you have to buckle down. Is that a daunting task to, you've written 20 novels and short stories and been writing most of your life now, but as you look at it, I mean, I think a lot of us would look at something and say, oh, it's due January 15th. That's months from now. We don't have to worry about that. How short of a time period is that for a writer?
That's a terrifyingly short time. I started work on this new book in November of last year, and when Corona hit, what I'd written felt really not relevant, and so I had to abandon my first draft. And it's just, I don't know. I'm glad I have a job, and I think my friends, I'm in my 70s, and my friends who retired, it's much harder to be in quarantine and lockdown when you don't have a job than it is when is something that you've got to get done. But at the same time, 6 months, that's not a very long time to write a 500-page novel and think of all the plot outlines and get the characters to come to life and speak to you. And and yet quarantine is making me dopey, so time drifts for me. So we all have our challenges right now, and I'm grateful that mine are not as daunting as many people are facing.
And as a writer, you were self-isolating before it was fashionable to do so, right?
Yes, but I could go out to dinner and concerts and see friends. And my husband, who was just the biggest part of my life, died 18 months ago. So self-isolating is not an attractive place to be. But I have my dog, who's still sound asleep. My husband was a scientist, and my dog has physicist's work hours. She's up until the middle of the night, and then she likes to sleep until noon. And we are not on the same, whatever you call it, biological clock.
It seems like you, with a character like V.R. Warshawski, it's so ripe for Hollywood. Your relationship with Hollywood was not off on a great foot, right?
Well, the problem is that you're right. Disney made a terrible movie about V.I. They still hold the rights to the character because of the way contracts were written in the 1980s when I signed with them all those decades ago. And they have not been willing to release the rights or budge on making a new project themselves. So it's sad for me because I think she really is the character who would be great in a TV series. But so it goes.
What's the incentive for Disney to hold on to a character that they're not making a show with?
Do not ask me, because I don't have the mouse's brain on my scanner. It's kind of a dog in the manger situation where they don't want to do it, but they don't want anyone else to do it. As soon as someone seems interested, they think, oh, this could be a valuable property, possibly.
Yeah, that's kind of the oldest love tale in the world. I don't love you, but I don't want anybody else to love you either, right?
Right.
All right, this collection of short stories, Love and Other Crimes by Sarah Paretsky. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Sarah, absolute pleasure talking to you, and thanks for an entertaining collection here to hold us over until your next novel comes out.
Thanks so much, Brian. Thanks for your interest.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
The game of love.